We've got some sponsors, though, that make this podcast possible. We'll kick it off with Multicraft. You have all heard of Multicraft underscore daddy and his terribly amazing Instagram videos. If you need ink supplies or a daddy, Multicraft screen printing and digital supplies for over 50 years has been providing you with top brands at competitive prices. You can mention the Printavo Pod, receive 10% off your first order, and Dave gives away a free case of PMI tape for every episode. All you have to do is DM him, and he'll pick a new winner every week. We love Dave. He listens to our episodes. He actually listened to our last episode and installed some AI tooling that we had talked about. So Dave, thank you. We love you.
That's so cool. All right, guys, if you want $250, Easy Way is doing a giveaway every single month off this podcast, which is so cool. Go to easyway.com/giveaway and put in your info. Then that enters you to get $250 in product credits. They're doing it every single month, though. So that is really, really cool. Easy Way, they're making reclaiming screens a whole lot easier with their systems, chemicals, and equipment. Plus, they've got some incredible people that can be able to help you and problem solve. And I know, Steven, you shared me some really cool educational stuff that they're got on their website too. So easyway.com/giveaway, put in your info.
All right. Are you ready to take your custom apparel to the next level? Stahls is the leader in heat printing solutions. Whether you're a small business just starting out or an established brand that's scaling, Stahls makes the hustle easy. They're here so you can simply heat press and profit. Get the equipment, transfers, and support your business needs to start smart and stay ahead. We use them for a lot of like patches, a lot of their 3D stuff. They're always coming out with new and improved ways to heat press. So visit Stahls.com today. You can save 20% off your next DTF transfer order using the code HUSTLER20. Thanks so much, Stahls.
And we'll be at Stahls facility in Michigan next week, Detroit suburbs or something. So maybe we should do a pod from there or something. We'll do one after it. Anyway, that'll be pretty exciting. GraphX Source. If you need a solution to improve efficiency and reduce costs in your art department, GraphX offers industry leading outsourcing options. Campus Inc. runs some number of artists there. I don't know the exact number. Nick's going to text me after, I'm sure. Handling SEPs, mockups, creative work, digitizing, and a lot of back office admin. They've been doing this for over 40 years. They've been around for quite some time. They've got offices all over the place. Pretty big company. And Steven visited one of their offices recently. That was really cool. Use the code PRINTAVOPOD24. That gets you 50% off your first vector, SEP, or digitized order at graphxsource.com. All right, let's jump on in.
FWTWF.
You have to put everything in code because it might be on camera.
You use a written to-do list now, Steven?
I have this just like notepad, and I try to write down like a couple things every day and just like keep it in front of me. It just kind of ends up being like a little just doodle pad for the day.
You know what's funny is what I find myself doing is like in the middle of, you know, I'll have probably 3 or 4 conference calls a day that are like this, and in the middle of it I'm like, oh shit, I gotta make a note about something that I'm supposed to do later or I forgot to do. It's like the shower thoughts.
You should put a whiteboard in your shower.
That's there's some science behind this we're gonna have to figure out, but we're well on our way to success.
If you come to Print Hustlers, you can, when you take a shower tomorrow. No, this isn't going anywhere. What are we talking about today?
Hey, you know, there's a hotel in, God, what is it called? There's this beer company. They're from Europe and in, it's in Ohio, Columbus, Ohio. There's this hotel that they have. And every shower has a beer fridge in it.
Doghouse Columbus Hotel.
Yeah.
Brew Dog.
Like in the shower, you can grab a shower beer?
Yes. Bruce. It's called actually shower beer. It says it.
Bruce, you crush shower beers, right?
My stomach's not beer proof.
Those guys actually wrote a book called Business for Punks. That's pretty good.
Interesting. Huh.
Did you read it?
Yeah. A long time. It's been like 10 years ago now. I can't remember it, but
I feel like those little things, like it could be something so small, like let's put a fridge in our showers. Like that's what everyone remembers. Or like, I don't know. I think like those tiny stupid details, you're like, what the hell? And it's like, no, it's the hotel with the shower beers.
Yeah. And that's, and even like, you might never drink one, but you will always remember that. I mean, I remember to talk about it right now.
Yeah. I mean, you guys did that a little bit at Printed Threads. I remember when we did the tour, you guys folded everything vertically. I don't know if you still do, to make it easier to pull out. And then also you put, was it a Frisbee or something at the bottom, like a cool toy or something?
It's always something different. Yeah. The idea is like to get people smiling before they even see the product. So it's like, it was funny. Like one time I was walking outside.
Oh, so it's on top, the toy or whatever, yeah. And the surprise on top.
Yeah. We fold everything to where it looks very clean when you open the box. But yeah, I was like walking outside once. And I heard a guy, he had just picked up his stuff and he's on the phone with a friend. He's like, dude, you remember those balsa wood airplanes we had when we were kids? He's like, they gave me one. You know, it's like, how do you?
Oh, that's right. You guys had the balsa airplanes that you got all made.
Yeah, we did salsa with Mrs. Renfro's. We did, we've done all kinds of stuff. Trying to think of what's been recent. The deck of cards. It's always something that's well designed and pretty fun.
And like, Brett, I remember you had a key that was a beer opener. Do you still have it, Bruce? And I think like I was like, hey Brett, could you tell me where you got that? And he's like, no dude, like everyone asks me that, like this is our I think you're just like, no. But like you guys really focus on like nice, just like gifts. I feel like you're always producing stuff to give to people. Is that just like something ingrained in you? Where did that come from?
I want to give cool stuff to people, but then I all like selling t-shirts is weird because you like the person that you're talking to probably doesn't need to buy t-shirts today, but they might need to buy t-shirts in 2 months, and how will they remember you? And so when you have that conversation with them and you give them the key bottle opener or whatever, they're, now you're with them, you know, now they think about you whenever they need something. So that was kind of, it's always been a little bit of a guerrilla marketing idea. But even with the key bottle opener, that was something that I came up with because it's funny, I don't drink beer anymore, but at the time I drank lots of beer and I was like, man, it's really annoying that every bottle opener is like awkwardly on your keychain. So like when you put your keys in your pocket, there's just one piece of something sticking out and jabbing you and stuff. It's like, why can't you just like take a normal house key and put the little hook on it so you can pop a beer open with it? And so I drew it out on a piece of paper and I sent it to a metal fabricator and they made them for us.
Whoa. So dude,
it's not like
it sounds like a patent thing, like, huh?
Yeah, it's not like I went on ASI's web search thing and found it. Like, yeah.
Sounds so, like a cool thing to patent, sell the Ace Hardware and close the shop. Wait, what?
Yeah, let's go.
Mr. Brett Bowden, how's your shop been this year? I don't know what you said publicly, but like everyone's had a little bit turbulent of last maybe year and a half, almost 2 years.
Someone was asking this question the other day. The reality is people might say they had a rough last year, or they're having a rough this year, or whatever they're saying. But the reality is everyone's had a rough 5 years. So it's like, you know, starting with the pandemic, like nothing has been normal since, because we had the pandemic, things got crazy. Then there was this crazy upswing. I think a lot of people invested in that upswing, including us, thinking that we were going to last there forever.
What'd you invest in?
We moved. That's when we moved into our new building. We were already planning to move. It helped us move into our new building when we got all the PPP money and stuff. And then we spent that money on making an amazing facility. And as we were moving, maybe we spent some money on a couple new machines or something like that. And then we had a huge staff. It was like the biggest payroll that we've ever had in like 2021, 22. And then in 23, there was a huge market correction, right? So like and that might not have been industry wide, but what we found through like tracking lots of economic data is Texas specifically leads our industry. So Texas print shops typically feel things before the rest of the country does. And so 23 was the year that we fell off a cliff. So we were at like 6.5 million in 22, and we did 4.5 million in 23. Yeah. So that was like, there was a couple key factors in that. We had one specific client that did a huge amount of business with us that they kind of went away. I mean,
they go like out of business or something, or like they didn't go out of business.
They just, shrunk incredibly. And I think if you look at a lot of specifically apparel vendors in that time, in 21, no one could get apparel on the shelves fast enough. So you guys remember, like, every vendor that we called to order stuff, whether it's Bella Canvas or whoever, is like, they're out of stock. And so whatever you can get, you get, and you put your logo on and you sell it. And so then people were like, oh my God, I can get 1,000 black shirts. I'm going to buy those right now. And so they bought them, and then they sat on the shelf, and then the market shifted, and then people stopped buying. And that was a huge thing. So even I would assume the big mills like Bella Canvas and Sanmar and whoever are probably still recovering from the amount of inventory that they put on shelves. So I bet you today, if you bought a t-shirt from one of the huge mills, it might have been produced 2 years ago or 3 years ago, which typically that's not the case. That was a huge market shift. It certainly affected our customers. It affected us. And then 23 is the year that we're like, oh my God, you can't unwind things fast enough. It's like you think, oh, we had a bad month this month, but next month could be good. So I don't want to go lay off a bunch of people. I don't want to go cut all of our costs and screw things up. But yeah. And then suddenly, you get to the end of the year and you're like, whoa, we lost $250,000 or, whatever the number is. Like, we lost a considerable amount of money because staffing is obviously everyone's biggest expense in their shop, and we had too many, and you don't want to fire your friends either. So it was a really hard thing. And then, so we look at 24 and it's a rebuild year. We climbed back up. We gained new customers. We grew the company back to over 5 million. And then this year will end right around 6 million. So
do you feel like there's like probably some scarring or battle wounds, whatever you call it, from.
Yeah. Like, what's your lesson learned from.
Yeah. Like, do you say now, like, okay, now top line's growing, but no, we're keeping everything the same? Or do you find yourself naturally, because it's hard to do that though too, like, do you find yourself naturally getting pulled up and bottom line continues to balloon as well?
We're way more strict about a lot of things. I think I try to be a really friendly guy and help out people a lot. And even like, it's pretty rare for me to put in orders myself, but every once in a while I put in an order myself and be like, oh man, that's really expensive. We should give this guy a better deal or whatever. It's like removing me from the process of selling t-shirts is really important because I want to give everybody a deal. But I think in general, we have created a lot more guardrails. We've created a lot more processes. We've made sure that we're charging the right amount for things. Like, you look around a print shop and see, like, man, whenever we print hoodies, it takes like 1.5 times as long to print hoodies as it does to print t-shirts. So they should be more expensive to print. You shouldn't be charging the same amount to print a t-shirt as you charge to print a hoodie or whatever. Or you look at like, one big failure that we were having is like, let's take like North Face, for example. I can go to the mall or wherever you go. I don't know if people go to malls anymore. I can go somewhere that sells North Face and buy this jacket for $100. Or I can buy it from Sanmar for $50 and decorate it. How much should I sell it to the customer for? And so for a long time, we were doing this thing. We were like, yeah, we charge $5 for embroidery. So now our customer can have that jacket for $55. It's like, wait, why? They're perfectly fine with buying it for $100 at the retail store. So we should sell it for $100. So kind of like understanding that, understanding like almost looking at like what promotional products distributors do and saying like, yeah, they're selling things for a premium price. We should sell stuff for a premium price too.
Brett, what about like overhead? So like when you saw that tail off and you started to lose that client and you're like, holy shit, we're going to do a couple million dollars less. Knowing what you know now, what would you have done differently? Because it's like you were part of a COVID boom, right? And all this crazy demand. And then all of a sudden, you know, things are starting to turn. What do you wish you would have done sooner when you saw that tide starting to turn a little bit?
When it comes to reducing costs, you can never act fast enough. We developed a couple measurements in that time to understand, like, I look at our sales daily now, and I know that our daily expenses are $8,000. And I understand what our growth, so let's say our gross profit percentage is like 50%. Somewhere around that is generally where our industry is typically at. So you say, okay, if that is the case, then we have to sell $16,000 a day to break even, right? And so now I track it granularly every single day and I look at our sales. And if we get below an average, if our sales for this week are below an average of $16,000, like we have to make cuts today. Like there's no, well, let's wait and see what's going to happen for the next couple of weeks because.
Oh, wow. So it's week by week.
Yeah. You, losing thousands of dollars a week is not okay. Right. And at the pace that we all perform, we have customers calling us asking for things tomorrow, things later this week, things next week. We're moving things so quickly that it makes our businesses a lot more volatile. We're not allowed, like, we can't project out the same way as a company that sells the same widget every day because we're selling extremely custom things.
But you are baking in the seasonality, right? I mean, this is like, I guess you're saying if it's supposed to be a good quarter, let's say, and we're falling behind on a week by week basis, that's when we're.
But I think what Brett's saying is like, because everything is custom on demand, event driven, you know, like let's just take, I don't know, Brett, your friends at Renfro Salsa, they can look and say like, we sold this much salsa last quarter, last year. We need to like demand plan and project it out and know how we have to like plan our factories where we're turning shirts in 7 days. So like one day it's a tsunami, the next day it's, you know, there's nothing in the tank. So I think that's what makes it super hard.
Totally. It's super hard. It's super volatile. It like, and then understanding like the production planning piece of it, where it's like for us, $1,000 represents 1 hour of work on one press. So understanding like, okay, this is how much we can get done. This is how much we should be able to get done. We sold $16,000 today. So that's fills two presses up with work or whatever that is. And understanding, how much work you have in the backlog so that you can staff accordingly. So we say like, oh man, we only have 16 hours of work. We can only schedule two presses, or maybe that's 2.5 or something like that. However it bleeds out. But like, oh shit, we sold $24,000 today. That means like we have to fill, you know, that much more press time or be able to get it done. Because another thing that happened to us is like we tried to staff down or reduce staff, but we had so much work in the queue, then suddenly we're falling way behind on the amount of work. So it becomes a problem of production efficiency and making sure that like what I say is if I put a quarter in to buy a gumball, I want the gumball to come out. I don't want to pay X amount of dollars to production per hour and not get the proper quota points out of that. So if I'm spending whatever, if we say our gross profit is 50% and we're spending $1,000, or we get an order for $1,000, that means I have no more than $500 to pay for the production of that order. And so I cannot spend more than that on that. And so understanding all of those things, we just got way out of line. We had too many people. We were spending too much money to produce, you know, I was spending a dollar on a 25 cent gumball. What, and it didn't taste that good. It lost its flavor really quickly.
My last thing on the cuts was, you know, if you have a slower week, like you said, okay, hey, we need to make cuts. What does that exactly mean? I mean, is it like hourly scheduling? It's just, okay, like you said here, we're not bringing folks on for next week, or?
I'll say like, hey, we're not going to work on Friday. You know who has the best model for this is restaurants. If a restaurant is slow, they cut their wait staff, right? If you like talk to a GM of a restaurant and how they schedule people, it's like, yeah, everybody's on the schedule. And it's like, hey, there's no one coming in to eat today. So like, go home. We can't pay you. Like,
man, that is interesting. You just said that. So my wife, she's a director of occupational therapy at a skilled nursing facility. Anyway, it's like older folks come in, they have a broken hip or something that they're healing to learn how to walk again or do the usual things they do around the house. Part of her job is scheduling, and it's never clicked until you said that. But yes, if there are less patients that come in through the door the previous day for them to like schedule out, they don't call in all of the staff. Exactly. They physically just like, hey, no thanks. Like it's a text in the morning, like keep you posted if there are more patients that come in the next day.
But I think with our industry, it's way harder to pull back. And it's super easy to hire more.
But is that a psychological thing, or is that a like true, like you don't want to lose anybody type of thing, right? Because you don't like, want them to start hunting around.
The example that I give is like, once you hire that person, you've brought them on, right? Like to actually tell them to leave is incredibly difficult or harder, or you're going to be like more sympathetic or empathetic. So you're probably going to just like take that on yourself and be like, that's fine. They can be here or whatever. We'll just pay them for Friday. And so like we had a part of our business, we have different segments and we were looking at it. It's one of our legacy parts of our business. And it used to do, you know, like a couple million dollars with 3 employees. And that same revenue segment is now doing just a little bit more with 5 employees. And it's like, why can't we just like cut 2 and bring it back? It's like, well, they've been here and now they're doing it. But now that part of my business, you know, like there's $100,000 more payroll on there and I just can't like peel it back. It's so hard to peel back people. I don't know. That's just my experience.
I think once we create some understanding about it and also like we need to budget like a certain amount of what is an allowable amount of overtime? And understand what that is. Like we should budget 10% overtime all the time. And if we don't need that overtime, then we say we make extra money, right? But when you need that overtime, give it to people and let them know like, hey, this is feast season. Like take this money, but sock it away because there's going to be a season that's slow. And you might only work 4 days that week. And so like, once you get over to like, if you're just hammered and you're over 10% overtime, then yeah, you need another person. But like until you're over 10%, you don't need the other person. You can just do it with your team and let them know, like sock it away.
It is interesting. The good guy versus the business guy, right? Like where do you sort of,
I mean, to Brett's point, like I don't handle any of that anymore because I'm too like sympathetic. And, you know, to Brett's point too, like Brett, you guys have a president.
Well, that's why Brett said he's out of the sales.
But like if you actually give it to someone or like kind of take it away from your, like, so you don't have a bleeding heart a little bit, you can make smarter business decisions. Like Bruce, you talk about this, like what does a CEO do versus like a founder, right? And you just make smarter decisions.
Or if you hired a CEO, what were the decisions they'd make today? And it's kind of interesting to think about.
Yeah, it's like the whole, like, you know, you sell a company to private equity. I don't know if anybody here knows what that's like, but they come in and they clean house. They change the people. They, you know, there's strategy behind that. And some of that strategy is the bleeding heart piece of it. It's like, hey, these relationships maybe are too strong to make really good business decisions.
Can we talk about, so like, I want to bring this back down to the average shop that's listening to this. You know, they might be overstaffed different times of the year, understaffed, hiring, whatever. What I'm hearing is you almost try to keep your staff as small as possible, but then pay them more when you're busy versus just hiring. Can we talk a little bit about like debt? Because I have heard in the last couple of months just some wild stories of debt. How do you look at loans, debt, working capital, lines of credit, maybe some mistakes or successes? But I think there's a lot of shops listening to this that probably have some debt, and it probably keeps them up at night.
Yeah, I this is funny. I had a friend. I had a friend like a long time ago that he wanted to lose weight, and he's like a bigger guy, and he's like, man, I want to lose weight. And one of my buddies is a personal trainer, and I was like, hey, my friend, he wants to lose weight, and he's just wondering like what should he do, what strategy should he, you know, take to lose weight. And my friend said, move more and eat less. And it's like, I thought that was so funny. It's like, just move more and eat less. That's all you have to do. You know, and you're like, okay, well, I think with money, it's the same way, right? You make more and spend less, you know? And so when we got kind of screwed a couple of years ago, like the only way to survive losing lots of money is sometimes to take on some debt. And so you got to decide like, okay, is this ship worth keeping afloat? You know, and you look and you draw you do all the modeling and you create budgets and you say, this business can still make money. This business can still make money at $4 million if we change all of these things, you know? And so we took on debt, and we, and here's the not fun thing. Like, banks don't like to give loans when your company's not strong. And so, which is smart of them to not put them in a bad position. So you have to go take on debt from someone that trusts you. Some people do that through investments. Some people just do that through maybe higher interest loans or whatever. But you have to say, don't take on debt without creating the budget that can pay back the debt. And that's where things get really scary, is people take on debt. They don't write a new budget. They just keep going.
Why? Let's break this down. Cause like, it is so easy to get a Stripe loan now, or like Shopify Capital. You can literally just click it and be like, you have $100,000 tomorrow. Boom.
That right? Sounds awesome.
It's crazy. And
it's great for the first day.
Yeah. So like, why should shops take debt? And then maybe why shouldn't shops take debt? Like, what would be the good, just granular, like, okay, let's start with like equipment. Right? How does your napkin math think about like equipment debt?
I think equipment every dollar you spend has to make $2 or whatever that amount is for you, $1.10. It has to make more than a dollar. And so if you buy a press for $50,000, And I bought a press recently, actually. I told myself I was absolutely not going to buy equipment this year. And then I bought the new Rock Impress. And the reason I bought the Rock Impress is we picked up a new client, and that new client needs private labels on the inside of sweatshirts. And the way we do that is we heat press them. And there's 25,000 garments that need to be done. And I did the math on that and said it would take us 30 working days to get that done. So what is that? 240 hours times however much we pay, you know? And so I start doing the math on that, and it's like, okay, I can get this work done in 3 days now. What is the savings of that? If this work continues, then where are we at? If we repeat this order once a quarter or whatever that is, like, let's do the math. Does this machine pay for itself in labor time? Yes, it does. Let's buy the machine.
It's a great Rock Impress ad, huh?
I will accept my payment. And yeah, but it always has to be a labor savings, and it has to be a long-term labor savings. The same thing when we bought a reclaim machine when no one was buying reclaim machines. In fact, our Lotus Holland reclaim machine is the second one in the United States. And And I did the same thing. It's like I had two people at some point like doing reclaim. You know, maybe it was because they were too slow or whatever they were, but we were imaging 100 screens a day or whatever. And I was like, this is the worst job here. It's the hardest one to get someone to do. How do I make it better? And what's the ROI on that? And now, like, I can't remember, like 12, 13 years ago when I bought that machine, those, they were a lot cheaper. So it was like, I don't know, cheaper than it is now. And so it was a lot easier to find that ROI and be like, oh yeah, this thing pays for itself in 2 years. And it has, and it's paid for itself.
Steven, what do you, I mean, you do a lot of coaching and consulting too, and seen folks, you know, take on debt in bad and good ways. Do you feel like, I mean, the ROI calculation on equipment makes sense. Is that you feel like the best? I know COVID kind of screwed people up too with like maybe over leveraging.
Yeah. I mean, I look at a press like kind of buying a car. That's like how my brain kind of works. Is like, okay, we have to have a car and we have to have a press. Is, you know, I'm going to finance it for 72 months.
What kind of car do you drive?
Anyways, Andy Rudman convinced me to buy my car.
Oh, anyways, yeah. I know exactly what route we're going down.
So in that vein, I'm like, okay, I'm going to spend $2,000 a month for 72 months. My rent is $4,000 a month. So like I have $6,000 in overhead. Can I make that work? And I think in my head, like that's smart debt. But then when you're like, oh, maybe I'll just buy an extra press or buy something else because it's so easy to get money, right? That's where it just like starts to creep into your overhead. So I think there's like smart debt on equipment. When interest rates are good, like interest rates suck right now. But then
another piece of that too, which is like the, oh, I've got this one really obscure job and I need to buy the press for that one obscure job. And then that job doesn't repeat. It's like, that's the job that you contract out. Don't try to like bring everything in house.
Right. Right. And so then there's like short-term debt of I'm not making payroll and I need capital. And I've seen like, you're supposed to draw on a line of credit to help inventory, you know, positions, to help cash flow, to help like down months. But if you're consistently not making payroll or not paying your bills, like taking a short-term debt is just like prolonging your problem and burying yourself. And I've seen shops that have taken massive credit card debt. Like, I don't even know what credit card interest is. Might be 25%, 30%. But once it starts catching up to you, it is so hard to get out of. And so like, if you're a shop that starts to have lots of debt, it's important to like stop, talk to a CFO, restructure it really quickly. But yeah, I've seen shops close down. I've seen shops have to sell their homes. Like, that's when it starts to get a little scary of like, why are you in this? Should you just go get a job for 70, 80 grand a year instead of doing this to yourself? I don't know, Bruce, what do you think?
What Brett said, I think I like the most, which is, yeah, if you're not doing so great, but you either take a loan out or you are taking a loan out for growth, it's like, what is the new budget plan? Like, it doesn't work on the old plan anymore. There's extra factors involved here. So what is the left turn that we're making to be able to go down? Because you're right. Like, you can't just keep doing what you were doing. Even if, again, things were good, you have an extra payment here.
Yeah, I think you talk about like the Stripe loan or those types of loans specifically. It's really nice, obviously, to be able to just click a button and get $200,000 or whatever they were willing to give you. But the problem with that is the aggressive payback. So it's like not even just the interest on top of it, which is high interest, but suddenly now you're paying back
13%.
You know, you might be, yeah. And you might be paying. Yeah. So you're like looking at, for me, let's say, I think we charge probably about $400,000 of customers' credit cards a month. If we're paying back at a 10% monthly or 10% of every transaction, that's $40,000 a month. And so your business has to be profiting over $40,000 a month just to pay back that loan. It's crazy. And so I think people don't think about that whenever they're budgeting all that stuff, or maybe they're not making a budget. You got to make a budget before you take a loan. I've gotten myself in trouble with that. in the past too. And it's just, it will just put you out of business.
So Brett, who helps you make a budget? Do you do it? Do you have a CFO? Does your president help you with it? How do you guys, what is like budget exercise at Printed Threads now?
I create it. We have a fractional CFO that will vet it and poke holes in it. And then I'll go to our president and be like, all right, this is what it is. You know, this is why, for example, like we have all these parameters. Like we won't, like having over 20% wages, like 20% wages to revenue is a big no-no. And when on the shop floor, when people are like, oh, we're so busy and we need another person or whatever, it's like, okay, let's put it all in the spreadsheet and see if we can afford that person. And like, we try to keep it like 18, 19, so that if we get to that point where we need to add a person, we can do it. But like, if we get above that 20%, I mean, you start choking away profit really fast, because one person costs, I don't know, $4,000 or $5,000 a month, right? So it's like that one person starts eating into profit in a bad month. Like that might be all the profit there was, right?
Do you budget for growth or do you budget flat? Like you just assume we're going to do the same as last year?
We work with this really great economist, and he's really helped us to kind of understand our forecasts a bit. And so like when we, in January, his forecast for us was that we would be up 5%. And so I budget based on being up 5%. Now you talked to, when we started talking about this, you said like a lot of people are having weird years or whatever. Like I hear that there's companies going out of business. I've talked to some of the big shops in our industry and they're like flat is the new up or whatever it is. And so you have to be really cognizant of what's happening around you and be careful and conservative. And then every day every month I'm looking at those numbers and understanding like, how far up are we, or are we going to be? And right now we're 8% up year over year. The next couple of months, I'm predicting that we're actually going to be up a little bit higher than that.
Bruce, what have you learned from running your own software company to now working with a much bigger organization and how they budget?
It's a great question. I mean, I tried to do the budgeting for a long time, which basically meant me exporting QuickBooks, you know, last 3 months or the previous year into Excel and just dragging out the numbers even further and saying, all right, this sounds about right. And then I try to budget, you know, certain roles and what the salary would be, keeping in mind that hopefully there was the revenue growth to support it. I mean, some of the times when we were growing quickly, though, the problem was the hiring was so late and lagged behind it. So, for example, like, oh, wow, we got, you know, there's all these shops. We need success managers to help support this. If we have the accounts, then now I put the job posting out. Then I start interviewing. Then there's a month and a half, 2 months. And then I have to train. That's another couple months. And then they're ready to go. It's like I'm 6-7 months behind where I was supposed to be. And so our problem was a little bit different, in that I need to try to be a little bit more ahead of the game in that aspect. Yeah, the budgeting aspect, there's so many really much better tools, let alone a fractional CFO. I should have jumped on that sooner, because the budgeting is to do correctly and try to be as accurate as possible is actually pretty difficult and time consuming shit. I mean, it takes a while, and I just felt like I was just like, ah, good enough. Like, this is fine to run on, but you're right. It probably wasn't fine.
I think on this call, the most conservative person is Bruce, and probably I'm the least conservative.
Steven somewhere in the middle there.
Yeah, Bruce is still has his allegiance to Southwest Airlines.
it's incredible.
A shareholder as well.
A shareholder
on the board on the board quarterly board calls. Hey, speaking of economists.
Oh, he wanted to switch gears. Okay.
Print Hustlers Conf 2025. If you go to madelab.io, you can see Print Hustlers Conf is coming up 2025. Alex C., the economist. If you saw him before, He's incredible. If you haven't, and this is the first Print Hustlers, because I feel like there's actually a good amount of people that it's the first time going to Print Hustlers. Incredible couple days around business operations, sales and marketing, industry insights, sales and automation, creative operations, just all kinds of really, really cool topics. Brett, maybe you can just share some insights about some of the speakers that you've got lined up.
And Brett's the brain behind planning this all. So he's been working tirelessly to make this all happen. So Brett, tell us about how your last couple of months have been and why you're so excited for Print Hustlers.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I think about it all year long, right? And then there's like the 2 months or 3 months prior that it becomes like a pretty deep dive. And then we do it. And then hopefully it's really successful and you have this sigh of relief. And then you say, oh man, I've got to figure out good people for next year and a good place and stuff. So for everyone that was in Newport Beach and saw Nigel Barker, like everybody coming up after is like, that was so amazing. He was so good. And I was like, ah, crap. How do I do this again next year? You know, it's like so challenging. But this year, 2 years ago, I started a relationship with this economist. His name is Alex Jasovsky. The reason we hired him is because we also put on a higher level kind of executive retreat for our industry called ThreadX. And we wanted this higher level economic view. And what we realized from his presentation is it would be really good to hear that report twice a year because everything changes a little bit throughout the year. Certainly this year has changed a lot. And so it's just really good to hear that economic report and understand it. And it's probably understandably frustrating for some people because like it doesn't always align with what you've been hearing or whatever, but it's just fact-driven data. It might not be what's happening exactly in your shop today, but it might be what's about to happen in your shop, or it might be what just happened in your shop. But understanding that data of where we've been, what we're doing, and where we're going will help you run your shop tremendously. It's helped me so much. So we're bringing him back. But the coolest thing about this year, we moved the conference back to Chicago for the year. And a special thing this year has been the SNL 50 stuff. So if you guys are SNL fans, this is their 50th anniversary. And a lot of people from SNL came from Second City. So there's an improv school in Chicago called Second City. They have their improv troops. It's very funny, a fun place to go. You laugh a lot. The reality is they kind of brought to me this idea for a keynote, which is using improv for sales and thinking about when you're going and talking to someone you have never met, what do you talk about? How do you get them on the topic of sales? How do you, you know, that is kind of going to be the keynote is talking, it's them going through a workshop of helping people understand things to talk about through the sales process and using improv to do that. So that's going to be really great. Bruce or Steven, were either of you at the very first ThreadX in Palm Springs?
I was at the second one
in San Diego.
Yeah, I was in. I was with Draplin and you really liked tequila then.
Oh yeah, no, I was the third one.
Oh, the third one. Okay, I think I was only. Yeah, but, I was at the third one. Go ahead.
So the very first ThreadX was in Palm Springs, and I had a buddy of mine speak at that. His name's Mike Nemchek, and he's worked at some of the most impressive marketing agencies in the country. And he's represented brands like Groupon. He's represented McDonald's, Velveeta cheese, Ford Motor Cars, and all these huge conglomerates. And I thought it would be really good to talk about how the marketing world has changed. Because for me, like 10 years ago, the most important thing was just creating really good social media content. And I don't think that's the case anymore. And especially in this kind of like AI driven content world, I think that using a kind of a more personal touch is going to become a lot more important to be organic. I was talking to a good friend of mine who is in the world of motion graphics, and he was talking about how AI is affecting their world. But the reality is, like, his son, who's 10 or whatever, can pick out what AI versus like real way faster than we can. And I think that that's probably going to happen in the next generation. So I just wanted to hear, like, what is effective marketing these days when everybody's creating all this garbage content? So, and then speaking of AI, we've got a guy named Rob Cressy speaking. He was actually introduced to me from Lucas, formerly of Robot Creative. And I guess they'd been working together on some projects. And so what I wanted to hear was, like, we've heard a lot of like very topical AI talks in the last couple of years. Like, in fact, I heard one recently where it was like, you need to use AI. And it's like, hey, no shit. Like, we're past that. Like, how do we use AI? What are the specific tools that we should be using? And so we're going to have him come in and speak to that. And we were on a call together, and he was actually showing me some things on the call that I was like, oh, this is rad. Like, I didn't know you could do that. So I'm excited about that. Megan Spire, who's the VP of marketing at Bella Canvas, is going to speak. Our VP of sales and marketing, sorry, but she has been in the industry for a long time. She's seen a lot of the crazy movement in our industry, changing from the basic being a Gildan 5000 to the basic being Ringspun. And how do you innovate beyond that? So also just talking about how did you get the world to start buying more expensive garments. And so I think that's something that we can all use because garments are getting more expensive. And what's crazy for me is I don't know about you guys, but we've seen the industry is just, our clients are just buying more expensive stuff suddenly, which is weird. Like, it is rare for us to sell a Toltex garment these days versus selling an AS color garment or a any heavyweight. Comfort Colors is like the number one selling product. It blows my mind. So want to hear her perspective. And then we've got a lady from Texas who has built a print shop called Promos Inc. up to 60 automatic presses. I can't even imagine that headache, but we're going to enlist our good friend Bruce here to interview her, just like he used to do at the old conferences. Her name's Carla Dooley. And so really excited to hear about that. Of course, we've got our lovely MC, Justin Lawrence, to talk. And I'm still working on like two more programming components that we'll be adding in very soon.
And then the tour this year is at Culture Studios. So another massive shop, probably one of the biggest printers in the music industry. Brett, you've been through Culture, right? Bruce, you've been through it. It is a spectacle, and you'll see all, like, a lot of the stuff they do is pretty under wraps, but you'll be able to see just like how technical they print at scale. I don't know if they have like 20 autos in there. It is one of, we take our staff to go see it just to show them like what the big leagues are. And Bruce loves pancakes. So there's a pancake breakfast.
Bruce, do you even eat gluten? Do you even eat carbs?
Bruce eats like shit. He eats pancakes, waffles. He always gets a side of pancakes at breakfast. It's like, come on, dude.
I guess if you have the time to go surfing every day, you know, you can burn those calories pretty good. So the second city studio where we're going to be holding the conference is right kind of around the Gold Coast in Chicago. We're staying at the Thompson Hotel. There's a link to get discounted rooms at the Thompson Hotel on our website. Right across the street from the Thompson is the original Pancake House. And it's really cool. It's this really cool little building. And I just, when I went out there to do the site visit, I was like, I want to do a breakfast here. Like, I just think it'd be so cool. So the first 60 people to sign up for the Fabric, it's the fabric.inc breakfast, can go eat breakfast, eat as many pancakes as you want with Bruce and Steven and Kevin Baumgart while they give a presentation over there. If you don't make the cutoff for that breakfast, which you should just sign up right now so you can get into it, we will have something for the people that don't make that cutoff.
there's only 60 spots in the restaurant. So we're going to take over the entire restaurant, which should be really, really special. It's our home turf. So Print Hustlers started in Chicago. It's pretty cool that, Brett, you're able to bring it back. It is probably one of the most special weekends that I cherish in the industry. And so if you've missed a couple, it's time to buy your ticket. If you haven't been to one, you need to buy your ticket. You can go to what? Madelab.io?
Yeah, you can just go to printhustlers.com.
There's a website, printhustlers.com.
Does that work? I always had problems with that domain. Oh, it does work. Sick. Yeah, printhustlers.com. Grab your guys' tickets. It always sells out. It's a great small group. I think, honestly, part of it is just educational stuff. And the other part is just meeting other shops, hearing stories, hanging out, doing a bunch of that cool stuff. And then people love the shop tours. I mean, I feel like that was like such a cool thing. So many folks have never been able to like really dig and pull things and ideas from different shops. So win-win and win.
And Second City, so Campus Inc. does our holiday Christmas party. I did it 1 year at Second City. We went to dinner and a show. And the next year I asked the team, what do you guys want to do this year? And they said, we just want to run it back. And so we do our annual Christmas party at Second City because it is hilarious. It's a super historic place. And it's like one of the special spots of Chicago. So Brett, shout out to you for actually securing that. It's going to be pretty sick.
Yeah, I basically took the idea of like, what I was like, the concept that Bruce had for Print Hustlers, and I just made it way more difficult. I was like, let's not just have the event in one place. Let's have it in like three or four places. And so anyways, I'm a glutton for punishment. But yeah, so the first day of the event will also be at the Second City Theater, which is the Inktavo Summit. And then that evening, a happy hour. Last year, we introduced some different contests at the happy hours, some print contests for prizes. And so we'll probably do something like that again this year. We'll announce soon.
Sweet. Thanks, Brett. It's Brett Bowden at Made Lab and Printed Threads and ThreadX and All Made and your local alderman.
What do you guys do on the weekends? Do you guys have weekends? I remember those.
Yeah.
You know, the first year of Made Lab, we did almost 40 events, somewhere between 30 and 40 events. And like, I didn't see a weekend that year. Like the only weekends I had were like Thanksgiving or Christmas or whatever. And it was, I like aged 5 years in 1 year. It was hard.
We'll see everyone in Chicago.
Yeah. I'll see you guys in Chicago. If I don't see you in Detroit first.
That's the next episode. Print Hustlers, thank you guys for joining us so much on this week's episode. We'll see you at Print Hustlers Conf. Get your tickets, lemainlab.io. Have a good one. Thanks so much for listening. Hopefully that was informative. Don't forget to subscribe. Don't forget to like. Don't forget to hit the bell for notifications. If you enjoyed this video, if you enjoy all the stuff we're putting out, it's really helpful. We love to just be able to see it. That means that we're doing a good job. To subscribe, hit the bell for notifications and hit the like button. And I'll see you in the next episode. Bye.